Thank you for visiting HawkeyeDrive.com, your stop for Iowa football men's basketball content. I'm Brendan Stiles, and welcome to our third edition this season of the Talking Hawks podcast, exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. Well, it was, I'm sure it was not the way many of you thought last Saturday's game was going to unfold between Iowa and Iowa State. The Cyclones were able to defeat the Hawkeyes 44-41 in triple overtime, and they, I don't want to say reclaim the Cy-Hawk trophy because it was a temporary one that they got, but it's in Iowa State's possession now. If you were to go down to the Hayden Fry Football Complex, you would see, well, not a completely empty atrium, but the Cy-Hawk Trophy is no longer there. Florida Rosedale is no longer there. And the Heartland Trophy is no longer there. And then, obviously, they haven't established a trophy yet for the Iowa-Nebraska game. So, other than the bowl games that Iowa's won the last 3 years, probably not much there, at least in recent memory. But, nevertheless, Iowa lost in triple overtime. They're now 1-1. And it was really... It was strange in the sense that it looked like early on, okay, Iowa State, the opening drive, the Cyclones went right down the field, ended up turning the ball over. Broderick Binns recovered a fumble that set it up for Iowa. The Hawkeyes jumped out to a 10-0 lead. They jumped out to a 10-0 lead, and they, in the second quarter, had possession. They started on their own five, ended up being a 3-and-out. Hawkeyes punted the ball away. Iowa State ended up with very good field position, looking to drive. Then the Cyclones turned it over, and Iowa got it back on the five. Then came what may have been the turning point in this game, if you will, which was Marcus Coker fumbling the ball and Iowa State recovering. The Cyclones ended up scoring a touchdown in that ensuing series. It was Iowa State's first touchdown against Iowa's first-string defense since 2006. So the Cyclones are able to get that monkey off their shoulders, if you will. And that really changed the game. I mean, and that's not to, at all to fault Marcus Coker and the performance he had, because he bounced back. He ended up having 35 carries last Saturday and rushed for 140 yards. You know, you take the fumble out of the equation, I think most people, at least Iowa fans, are going to be pretty satisfied to see those numbers out of him. Maybe not so much the 35 carries, but the fact that he got 140 yards, he averaged 4 yards a carry, that's a good number for any running back to get. But anyway, Iowa State, the Cyclones were able to tie the game there in the third quarter. It was in the second quarter they tied it. It was tied 10-10 at halftime. Iowa had a really strong performance from Mike Meyer. He made 3 field goals there in regulation, including a 50-yarder, which is a career long. And then he made a fourth kick in the third overtime. We'll get to that a little bit later. Iowa State then responded with another touchdown and was ahead 17-16 at the end of the third quarter. Then the Hawkeyes started driving. You got a big play there with Vandenberg completing a crossing pattern to Marvin McNutt. McNutt got down to either like the 2 or 1 yard line. Then Marcus Coker was able to punch it in, give Iowa the lead. Keenan Davis caught the 2-point conversion pass attempt from Vandenberg. It was 24-17. Then the Cyclones tied the game there in regulation. And it was tied at 24-all. Iowa got the ball, started around on its own 20, had a minute 17, 2 timeouts. This is one of the handful of decisions that I know people have seemed upset about in the last few days. And this was Iowa's decision to basically run out the clock after a first down play with Marcus Coker didn't work out the way Kirk Ferentz and his staff had hoped. I will say it's not surprising to see what Iowa did there, but I can understand where people would be upset because there is that much time on the clock. Iowa does have 2 timeouts at its disposal. You watch the game the night before. Missouri's playing Arizona State. Arizona State's up by 2 touchdowns there in the fourth quarter. Missouri comes back to tie the game. And the Tigers actually get the ball around a similar time. It was inside 2 minutes. They were able to drive down the field. And they set up a chance for a game-winning field goal before Gary Pinkel completely botched that situation up, icing his own kicker, calling two timeouts, and then his kicker hooked it. But here, I mean, Iowa, I guess the reason why it seemed confusing in that particular instance is because, as opposed to that Ohio State game, I think this is the one, and this is the one reason why I don't think it was as big a problem when Iowa played Ohio State that they settled for overtime, because if you recall in that game, Daniel Murray missed a chip shot field goal from 22 yards out, and you could see in that kind of moment, okay, can you trust him to make a field goal from further out? And can you trust Vandenberg, who at the time was a redshirt freshman, to lead you down the field? There was the series before when Iowa tied the game. Vandenberg almost threw an interception for a pick six that got called back. But now think back to this past Saturday. Vandenberg, he didn't have the best game by any means. And there were certainly some throws that that could have been better, but he didn't play all that terrible. You know, and at the end of the day, the Iowa offense was able to put up 41 points. To me, the story was about the defense. I'll get to that in a second. But you watch that situation. I mean, Iowa had just gone down the field before and was able to take the lead with a touchdown and get a two-point conversion and make it a seven-point game. You know, what's not to say that Meyer – You couldn't have got it down to, like, the 35-yard line and had Meyer try, like, a 52-yard field goal there at the end. Now, granted, you're going the other direction as opposed to the direction Meyer did make that 50-yard field goal. But the fact of the matter was he showed the range. He had the confidence. The coaches had the confidence in him. You know, at that moment, you got to wonder, okay, are they going to at least consider this? Because you have to also remember, too, in college football, the clock stops when you pick up a first down. It's not like the NFL where the clock just continues to run. You know, you pick up a first down, the clock stops until the chains are done moving, and then they start the play clock again. So, you know, I could see why people are frustrated by that, but nevertheless, the game went to overtime. Iowa State won the coin toss, so they went on defense first. Iowa, you know, took the lead. Marcus Coker got a touchdown run, made it 31-24. Then Iowa State tied the game, completed a fourth down, tied the game. And then the second OT, Iowa State got another touchdown, went up 38-31. Then Keenan Davis made a really nice play there in the second OT on the 23-yard touchdown he scored on. It was a crossing pattern or a slant, whatever you want to call it. He got his hands on it, found separation, went into the end zone. And then Iowa elected to send it to a third overtime, so it was 38 all. Then came the third OT. Third and six, Keenan Davis drops a pass that he even said after the game. I asked him point blank about it. He said, that's a routine catch that, you know, and I'm paraphrasing this part of it, but, I mean, that's a play that he's going to make more often than not. You know, I don't want to necessarily say 9 times out of 10, but it was a catch that he at least makes. Maybe he doesn't pick up the first down, but he doesn't drop it there most of the time. Very rare you see him drop a pass in that situation. So it was fourth and six. Iowa State got called for a 5-yard penalty. So instead of it being fourth and six, it becomes fourth and one. Given how the defense was struggling, it makes sense that people were wondering, okay, fourth and one, why don't you go for it here? Because you only need 1 yard. Marcus Coker's had a really good game to that point. And, you know, if you're not able to pick up a yard against Iowa State's defense, what makes you think that you are deserving of winning the game anyway? That seemed to be the mindset of some people. Ferentz elected to take the points at Meyer, which I don't honestly think is a bad decision, because if you understand his thinking, and this is the way most coaches are going to think in that situation, you want to take the point. You want to take the points when you can get them, especially in that moment. And you want to have the belief that your defense is going to get it done, even if they've shown that they haven't. You want to think, okay, maybe this is that time they finally get a stop. Maybe this is the time something finally gets figured out. Now, of course, that wasn't the case, and Iowa State ended up scoring a touchdown in its ensuing series and won 44-41. But going back to the defense, to me, that was the story from last weekend's game, because it showed the talent that is missing from even a year ago. And granted, Iowa had its struggles last year in late game situations, but the talent's not there. Or there is talent, but it's not as much as there was as before. You know, the fact of the matter is you don't have Adrian Claiborne, Christian Ballard, Carl Klug on that defensive line. You don't have Tyler Sash and Brett Greenwood in that secondary. Okay? The fact of the matter is there are struggles. And when the guys weren't able to stay and contain, Steele Jansen is able to make plays. You know, think back to 2 years ago in 2009 when Iowa had its magical season there and ended up winning the Orange Bowl. One of the big mantras on the defensive side of the ball was 6 seconds of hell. And at the time, what they basically referred to it as was that every play should last 6 seconds. And if it goes beyond 6 seconds, then the defense isn't getting the job done. Well, you know, forget time of possession, forget however many plays Iowa State was running. The stat that I would like to know is how much time elapsed between each play for Iowa State. I'm not talking, like, the actual time of possession, but, like, this amount of time between the second Steele Jansen took the snap from the center and when the ref's whistle blew. Because if you could tally that up, I'm willing to bet that the average out, you take the number of plays Iowa State had and the amount of time that went off the clock, I bet you it averages out to more than 6 seconds. Now, granted, the overtime, you don't have a clock, so you wouldn't be able to figure those numbers out. But to me, that would probably average out to 6 seconds, and that right there, or more than 6 seconds, and that would be the problem. That would be a problem from Iowa's defense. Because, let's face it, schematically, they're not going to change. But I will say this. This defense, it isn't as good as it was before. And now, that's not to say that they won't bounce back this Saturday against Pitt. For all we know, they could absolutely shut down Ray Graham, who at the moment is the nation's leading rusher with 322 yards on the season. For all we know, Iowa's defense could come to play Saturday, look very good against Pitt, and be a big reason why the Hawkeyes pull out a victory on Saturday at Kinnick Stadium. That could happen. Conversely, it could be that Ray Graham is a big game, Tino Sinceri is a big game, and Pitt's able to get out with a win. We don't know yet because it's not Saturday. But it's one of those situations where I look at it as an observer, somebody that watches it closely and is following what happens. And the way I look at it is this. I think that some of the issues that you saw on Saturday with the Iowa defense, I don't know if those issues are going to go away. And again, that might not mean that this Saturday they struggle again. For all we know, they can play a lot better defensively, and the Hawkeyes could come out with a convincing win. But what I am trying to say is the next game Iowa loses this season, and let's just be honest right there. I don't see the Hawkeyes running the table the rest of the way. They're not going to finish 11-1. My point is the next game Iowa loses this season, I'm willing to bet some of the reasons they lose, why they lost, and how they lost are going to be very, very similar to what happened against Iowa State. It's going to be because the defense struggles to get off the field, and teams are able to move the chains on third downs. This is a stat that I'm amazed no one has been talking about. Iowa State converted 13 of 20 first downs, or third down conversions, excuse me. 13 of 20 third downs, Iowa State picked up the first down. Anytime a team is getting 65% of its third downs, they're converting for first downs, of course the defense is going to get tired out and they're not going to get off the field. And it's going to be a problem. I think the coaching staff realizes that. And, you know, it's interesting. Ferentz said on his radio show this week that maybe there's going to be some changes here in the next couple weeks. What changes? I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, right now, this defense, they're a long ways away. And because of that, it puts a lot of pressure on guys like James Vandenberg, like Marcus Coker, that, you know, while they have experience, they don't have the amount of experience that many act like they do. You know what I'm saying? You look back at last week, one of the comments that really stood out to me regarding James Vandenberg that came out of Kirk Ferentz's mouth is the fact that, you know what, he's not John Elway. He's still only had 3 starts now. At this time, he's had 4 career starts. He'll be making his 5th this Saturday. But the fact of the matter is he's only started 4 games. Marcus Koecker, he started four games last year, and he started the first two. So he only has six starts to his name. So they have some experience, but they don't have a whole lot. That's something that's going to grow over time. And right now, they're going to have their issues. And when they have their issues and the defense has their issues, you get what you saw on Saturday. Now, as far as this week's podcast goes, I attempted to get a couple of guests on this week, an Iowa writer. I won't reveal their identity, but long story short, Tuesday came and went. I was hoping to talk to them on Tuesday following the press conference and player interviews, and they got out the door before I was able to confront them and ask them about coming on, given 5 minutes of their time. So there's that. And then the Pitt reporter that I was hoping to have on, I reached out to them Sunday via email. Never heard back. So the only guest this week is Chris Rao. Thankfully, he was able to meet me Wednesday night, and we were able to do that segment. So you'll be able to hear that next. Hopefully next week we have additional guests to come on, both from the Iowa side and the Louisiana Monroe side when Iowa takes on ULM next week. But when we come back, the segment that you all enjoy anyway, which is me talking with Chris about the Hawkeyes and about the college football pick'em games that we have on HawkeyeDrive.com, which, by the way, if you want to participate in that, go to HawkeyeDrive.com, hover over the page 24 Heisman Road, you'll see the pick'em page. Click on that. There's a list of 10 games, including Iowa's game against Pittsburgh. Make sure to include a score with your Iowa Pitt prediction when you submit your picks to HawkeyeDrive@gmail.com. We'll be using that to settle any tiebreakers that may exist at the end of the weekend. And hopefully you all like to take part in that. And if you win, you get a prize. So when we come back, Chris will join me to break down a little bit more of this Iowa-Iowa State game, look ahead to Iowa Pitt, and discuss the pick'em game. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Talking Hawks podcast, exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. I'm Brendan Stiles. This is a segment I'm sure you've all been waiting for. I'm back here with former Iowa defensive back Chris Rao, who I'm sure has some thoughts on his mind after what happened last weekend. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm just getting ready for this weekend's game with Pittsburgh. Pretty much a payback, man.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll just cut right to it here with how the two decisions made by Coach Ferentz that everyone's kind of been talking about for the last few days. The first being the end of regulation. There was a minute 17, two timeouts. They elected to play for overtime there. They ran a run play with Marcus Koecker, didn't really get much of anything, and then they just ran the clock out. The second being the fourth and one in overtime, which came following an Iowa State penalty on fourth and six, moved it up 5 yards. And the decision to kick a field goal there, take the three-point lead, and then trust the defense, which was struggling up to that point and ended up giving up a touchdown to lose the game. What was just kind of going through your mind? You see both of those decisions kind of unfold.
When I seen both of those decisions actually unfolded, when I seen the last drive of the game, I sit here and say, okay, let's see what exactly Coach Ferentz is going to do with the offense. And usually, for the most part, with some teams, just period, you try to get a run play off and see what it does. And then you have two timeouts here and say, hey, okay, timeout, and then go find another play to get closer and closer to a field goal possession or whatnot. So I think Coach Ferentz, you know, it's typical what Coach Ferentz does. You know, he's just trying to see if he can get a spark or whatnot and get the guys running and everything. But it's not a fan favorite play calling. And also with the fourth and one and coach going for the field goal, coach firmly believes in his defense and his defense to take care of the pain and everything that went on throughout the game. And also Coach Ferentz felt that they were going to make a stop. But with the game, the way it was going, I'm sure what fans was like, hey, man, I don't know if you really want to kick this field goal and just go for the game and just say, hey, leave it on your defense. Either way it went, when it came down to it, I really thought it came down to the defense because that quarterback pretty much had his way against us Saturday.
I do have a thought on the defense I want to run by you. But before that, just when you think back to just since the game's ended, I know Coach Ferentz obviously pressed the post-game press conference Tuesday, and I'm sure all the time in between. He's heard it from media, fans, anybody that he's had any encounters with in the last few days, just about the decision-making. How much, as a former player, you know him obviously better than most people. How much do you think that this really eats at him? I know he tries not to show it and just it has the flush it mentality when, you know, you're in the public. But when you're on that bus ride home from Ames, or, you know, you're watching the film and reviewing what could have been done better, how much do you really think that this is eating at him and the coaching staff just the way it unfolded?
Well, I wouldn't say that it actually ate him inside, you know, with making his play calls, because Coach been a head coach for 13 years now, and I firmly believe that any decision that he makes, he's 100% with it at the time being, maybe not after everything folds. But one thing with Coach is that he firmly felt that his defense would get the job no matter what, because his defense has done it in the past. And also, you know, just coming from a player's perspective, you know, with Coach Ferentz, is that Coach Ferentz is one stand-up coach. You know, he always been there, and he always wanted the best out of his players no matter what, through the ups and downs. But for the most part, with Coach Ferentz making his choices, it's pretty much some people look at it from the past, or either just in the actual game, like, hey, I really feel that they'd show up at this point if they didn't show up all day long, because our defense had been known to come up with big plays when we needed it.
And you bring up the defense. One thing that was talked a lot about on Tuesday was the whole issue with contain, because, as you mentioned, Steele Jantz is able to make plays whenever he got out of the pocket. How much is being able to keep contain, how much of a role does that play in Norm Parker's defense? And what did you see that maybe allowed Steele Jantz to make the plays that he made for Iowa State?
One thing that I seen with Steele Jantz, just period, was this guy is a quarterback that actually can beat you with his arm and his feet. That was the first thing that I seen after a couple plays, and it's just like, all right, we might have a nightmare here. I think with the contain deal is that, you know, when you got a defensive line, some defensive linemen can't go out there and just pass rush every play and get but so far up the field. The next thing you know, that quarterback is going up under him or either rolling right outside of them. So one of the biggest thing was just contain, you know, just get to a certain area and pretty much keep a funnel, and everybody else on the team can sit there and funnel him down and take him down for a sack or either a loss of play. And also with that being is that you make it harder on the defensive backs, you know, on Greg, on Micah, on Colin Sleeper, and also Prater, on them to cover more longer and longer. So that gives the receivers a better chance at getting open. So that's why some of the plays that we've seen was made, that's what happens when a defensive back got to cover longer, it makes it harder on them.
Now, switching over to what happened on the offensive side of the ball, two players I want to ask you about. One is Marcus Coker. He was able to bounce back. He had 35 carries for 140 yards, a couple touchdowns. Did have a fumble, though, in the second quarter when Iowa was up 10-0 that kind of swung the momentum back in Iowa State's favor. From what you were able to see, and obviously we all saw a lot of him, what was your overall take on just how he was able to kind of bounce back from the opener that he had where he really kind of disappointed?
Actually, I thought Marcus Coker had a solid game. The biggest thing that, like you said, was that the fumble that he fumbled earlier in the game has really taken its toll on him. And it actually probably – he could actually had a better game, you ask me. And Coach Ferentz was like, okay, I seen Coach Ferentz actually get away and went straight to the pass game and the run game here and there. It's sometimes, you know, where you have times where you're going to pass because you have no other chance in the game really to do anything but pass because it's hot or either it's cold, you know. And one thing with Marcus Coker, I thought that Coach Ferentz can use him a little bit more, and I'm sure we'll see him this weekend used a lot more. And he's going to have his mojo back this weekend. We're coming back home. We're going to feel good. It's Pittsburgh. There's no reason not to get up for this game. It's a big game. It's a lot of people back. And I think Coker bounced back big time and have a good game this weekend also.
And then the other player is James Vandenberg. He – had a decent game, I thought, but there were some times he wasn't able to hit players, and sometimes it was because players, wide receivers, tight ends, are dropping passes. The one that really stands out was in the third overtime, the drop that Keenan had on 3rd and 6. He described it as a play that was 9 times out of 10 a routine catch for him. Then there were some that James just seemed to have struggles getting the ball out, whether it be because of pressure or maybe just putting a little too much on the ball or not enough. Just from what you were able to watch from him, what did you take away?
One thing that points come straight out for me was that James was overthrowing the ball a couple times that I've seen, especially to Keenan. And I know he has some big receivers and whatnot, have bigger targets. I just thought James was throwing it a little too hard or a little too high, you know. And Iowa State defensive backs were so tall. And I think James needs to settle down now. It's time for him to settle down. And at Iowa State, you know, at being his second career start on the road or whatnot, it's time for him to settle down, sit here and like, hey, I got this coming back home against Pittsburgh this week. And I really think James should be ready to go. He got all these kinks, his 2 games under his belt this season, and he should be able to have Marvin and Keenan and Brad Herman and CJ and all the other guys to sit there and be able to rely on this weekend. I really feel that James should be able to bounce back big time this week.
Now, looking at Pitt, you actually had the chance to play against them last time when it was at Heinz Field. And the one thing that I think everyone remembers from that game is the quarterback controversy at the time with Jake Christensen and Ricky Stanzi. For you personally, and I know that this is a completely different Pittsburgh team that's going to be coming in this week, but when you think back on that experience, what are some of the memories that kind of stick with you, whether they be good or bad? Obviously, you guys weren't able to win the game, but just the things that kind of stood out from that week in particular.
Well, that week, the biggest thing that stands out to me that looking towards this game Saturday is that pretty much the teams are in the same position, you know what I mean? We got some pretty solid teams, or we just coming off our first loss of the season. Pittsburgh is 2-0, and also they have a solid team. We have a solid team. We both need to make the next step to make a push towards a conference championship or whatever it is to be a proven team. So I really feel that the biggest thing is that we get a chance to play a bigger team. We don't usually get a chance to sit here and play at Arizona or Pittsburgh. So let's make our chances and make that next step into going to play with the big boys probably year in, year out.
And one thing that stands out, too, with Pittsburgh right now is they have a running back in Ray Graham who currently leads the nation in rushing. He has 322 yards on the season. Granted, 200 of those yards came in their opening game against Buffalo a couple weeks ago. But when you played your senior year, if I'm not mistaken, Nick Grigsby from Arizona, I think, was leading the country in rushing when they came in here. And would you say maybe the game plan for containing Graham or stopping him is going to be similar this week as opposed to what it was like when you guys played Arizona a couple years ago?
Well, I wouldn't say it'd be the same type of game plan. Our game plan is to stop the run first and foremost every game, because when you stop the run, you sit there and make the team sit there and have to sit back and make passes. And when teams have no choice but to pass, our defense, it falls right in our defense hand. And I really feel that this week we should be able to stop Graham. We stopped LeSean McCoy the year he was starting there. The biggest problem that we had against Pittsburgh was that backup quarterback they had, that they were contemplating with their quarterback issues back there in, what, three years ago. So I think that Ray Graham, he's going to have a solid game, but we're going to have an even better game because this is a statement game for us, I think, early in the season. And
well, you described this as a statement game. One thing that I feel compelled to ask you about it then is, do you feel that maybe there's going to be a little bit more creativity in some of the play calling between all the scrutiny that there's been in the aftermath of Iowa losing to Iowa State? And also, I just think back to last year, there's something similar took place when Iowa lost to Wisconsin and Ferentz was heavily scrutinized for not realizing that Wisconsin might run a fake punt. And then the next week against Michigan State, it seemed like they just laid the gauntlet out on the Spartans. You had the trick play, or the, I shouldn't really call it a trick play, but the lateral from Tyler Sash to Micah Hyde on that interception. And then Marvin McNutt, I believe, ran a reverse pass, and it was in the fourth quarter when Iowa was heavily ahead. Do you sense that maybe there's going to be a little bit more creativity when it's, as you say, a statement game?
Well, I don't think it would be a lot more creativity than what we've seen in the past here, past couple years or whatnot. I really feel that Coach Ferentz is going to go back to the basics, and that's what Coach Ferentz does after a big win or a loss or whatnot. I don't think he's going to get creative at all. I think he's going to go with the run and shove it down their throat and then go for the pass, and whatever clicks, he's going to stay with it. That's the biggest thing I realize about Coach Ferentz. And I really feel that Coker should be ready with his heart had to go this weekend, because Coach Ferentz is going to run that rock, and he's going to make sure that we get some guys in there to catch the rock also.
Now, I've kind of grilled you here on between what happened last week and looking at this game. Are you ready to discuss and pick them now?
Let's go.
All right. And just a reminder, you guys can participate in the HawkeyeDrive.com pick them. All you got to do is go to the website, hover over the page 24 Heisman Road up at the top of the homepage, click on the pick them, and then you have the list of 10 games right there. Remember to include a score with your Iowa Pitt prediction along with the other games that are on there, and then just submit them to HawkeyeDrive@gmail.com. Congratulations go out to Rob Brown, who is a subscriber of HawkeyeDrive.com. He won last week's pick 'em, going 7-3. Rob has a chance to defend his crown. Maybe somebody else beats him. We'll find out. But we'll start now with the first game on the docket. Auburn found a way to beat Mississippi State last week. We both ended up being wrong there, but so they stayed in the top 25. They're ranked 21st. Now they're going to Clemson to play a team that last year they beat in overtime down at Auburn, and it really, in my opinion, kind of jump-started their season, because that's the game that I feel everyone took notice of Cam Newton, and then he just continued to progress as the season went on for him. Now this year's game is at Clemson. The Clemson Tigers are coming off a rather uneasy victory. They only beat Wofford by 8 points, but they are at home. And I guess I'll get your thoughts here on this. And then.
Well, my thoughts with this game is we sit here, we counted Auburn out last week with Mississippi State with team on the rise, and I sit here and I'm like, oh gosh, why did we have to pick this game first? But the biggest thing is that Clemson shows up at home all the time in Death Valley, and I'm going to go with Auburn this week. As much as I sit here and I can't sit here and pick Auburn to lose 2 weeks in a row, but I really feel that Auburn got their feet on the ground running, and they should be able to take care of business, a close game.
I have to admit, Auburn is slightly better now than I thought they were going to be, and I'm actually going to pick them here as well. I just, even though the home field plays the Clemson's favor, I just don't know if they have enough there to beat a team like Auburn that, let's face it, they found a way not only to keep winning, but they find a way to win close games too. I mean, these last few weeks, Utah State, they only beat them by 4, and then they beat Mississippi State with a goal line stop. But, hey, whatever gets the job done. And actually, along those lines, there's something that I was just kind of thinking about. I have a friend that covers Clemson for a living, and he mentioned how during their fall camp they would actually practice running down the hill touching Howard's Rock. I'm sure you've seen that tradition. When you played at Iowa, is that ever something that you ever practiced, like with the swarm? Is that something that you guys are trying to get down? Or is it one of those things where it was game day? It's just like, hey, let's just go out and do this.
No, not actually. We actually did a swarm once in fall camp. We do it usually that Saturday right before the game, and that's it, so those freshmen know what the heck they're doing. But other than that, we pretty much know the swarm, the upperclassmen, and we take a lot of pride in it. And not really. We don't do much tradition-type stuff until the game.
That's the one morning game that's going to be going on while Iowa plays Pitt. Now some of the later games will start with number 16 Florida playing host to a Tennessee team that I correctly predicted would beat Cincinnati. You said the Vols are going to overlook since you're looking ahead to this game. But now both teams are 2-0. This game's in the swamp. What do you see? How do you see this one playing out?
Well, gosh, here we go again. Tennessee, they showed up big, and their quarterback showed up huge, actually. He had a pretty good game against Cincinnati. Cincinnati, the wheels just fell off towards the end of the game against them. But I have to pick Florida. Florida's at home. They've been under the radar. This is a team that they want to play right now. It's early in the season, and Florida get to see who they are. Tennessee get to see who they are, and I'm going with Florida.
I agree with you. I think Florida wins this game, not just because it's at home, but really, even though they've played a couple of cupcakes, they've won convincingly. And I think John Brantley, he struggled in Urban Meyer's offense. I think he has it down here with Charlie Weiss being the offense coordinator there. And, you know, and from Florida's vantage point, I mean, this is – they're in SEC schedule mode now because – they played two non-conference games, and then they have two more at the end of the season. These next eight games are all in conference. And this is a game they really need to win because after this week, they go to Kentucky. Then they start October with Alabama, LSU, and Auburn consecutive weeks. Yeah, and two of those games are on the road. So it's a really difficult schedule that the Gators have ahead of them, and I feel like if they're going to have any chance of winning the SEC East, they got to make a statement early on, and I think they will here against the Vols on Saturday. Moving on, Washington visits number 11 Nebraska. Both teams are 2-0. This is actually the third time in a calendar year that these teams are going to be meeting. They met in Seattle last year. Nebraska clobbered them. Then they had a rematch in the Holiday Bowl after the Insight decided to have Missouri play Iowa instead of Nebraska. And Washington, Jake Locker and Washington got payback against the Huskers in that game. Now they're playing in Lincoln. Washington, they're 2-0, but neither of their victories are all that impressive. And with this game being in Nebraska, I just don't see the Huskers losing at home. And I'm going to go with Nebraska here.
I'm going with Nebraska also. They really, really watched that game from bowl season. I really feel that Bo Pelini has sat down there and said, hey, guys, remember this game. Remember you guys handled them early in the season last year. You came back and laid an egg during the bowl season. So those guys are pretty motivated to go against Washington this weekend at home, and Washington will see a lot of red this weekend.
And just to be clear, too, I like Steve Sarkisian. I think he's a good coach. I just don't think they have the talent there yet. They're kind of in a rebuilding mode, if you will. And I just don't see them going into Lincoln and getting out of there with a win. Now you have number 15 Michigan State is 2-0, and they're going down to South Bend to play a Notre Dame team that we both picked to lose to Michigan. They did, but man, I almost feel bad for Notre Dame in a sense because they could just as easily be 2-0 right now. It's just the turnovers have been killing them here. I think they've had 9 in these first two games. And as exciting as that last minute, whatever, minute 12 of that game was, they still ended up on the short end of the stick. And they're in must-win mode now because if they fall to 0-3, it's just going to struggle. Mm-hmm. It's going to continue to be a struggle. I actually think, even though Michigan State, in my opinion, is a better team, I think Notre Dame actually gets it done on Saturday. And the reason why is they're thinking back to last year and Mark D'Antonio calling that fake field goal in overtime to beat them. And I guarantee you, Brian Kelly's probably been reminding his team of that all week between that and how the end of that game last Saturday unfolded at Michigan. I just feel like Notre Dame's going to be coming into this one with a chip on its shoulder, and they're going to get their payback. So I'm going to go with the Irish.
I was getting ready to say Notre Dame actually been playing some really good games. It's just that the ball just haven't fall on their side. And the biggest thing is that Michigan State is a team these past couple years, and they've improving it. They have a great quarterback in Kirk Cousins. They have a really good running back in Baker. And I would like to pick Notre Dame at home. They're the favorite, actually, at home this weekend. But I'm going with Michigan State just because they're on the ground running. They struggled against Youngstown State, but they came back last week and took care of business.
And I think, too, just the fact that this is Michigan State's first road game, and their road schedule is brutal this season. But this is their first trip outside of East Lansing. And I think Notre Dame has it figured out with Tommy Reese at quarterback. I think he performed pretty well especially you think of it, that last drive. They thought they had the game won when he threw that touchdown. And that receiver was wide open. But yeah, so you got the Spartans. I'm picking Notre Dame there. Next game, number 23 Texas visits Pasadena to take on a UCLA team that absolutely embarrassed the Longhorns in Austin last year. I mean, they just, of all the games, to me, this is what really sent Texas's season a year ago into a tailspin, because UCLA went in there, crushed them, and they just weren't the same team. They just couldn't figure anything out since. And much kind of like I see Notre Dame having a chip on his shoulder, getting payback, I think Texas is on a mission this week, and I don't think they're going to let UCLA beat them again like they did the way they were able to last year. I'm going with the Longhorns.
I would say that UCLA has the upper hand, not just because of the game last week, but the Texas quarterback situation.
Yeah.
Mac Brown has a lot on his hands, talking about co-starters and all this stuff, and then the guy that played in relief for Colt McCoy in a national championship game. This guy hasn't figured it out yet after starting a year, but I really feel that Texas should be able to turn back into Texas form, because if Texas lose this game in Pasadena, it's going to be a tough one. But at the same time, UCLA lost to Houston, which is a tough team that has a really good quarterback, as we know. But I really feel that UCLA hasn't taken their step next to sitting here taking their step next to being a better team. So I really feel that Texas should be able to pull this one off on the road, even though it's going to be a tough one.
Next game here, we have number 22 Arizona State, who beat Missouri in overtime. I know, I had to remind you of that one. But they go to Illinois this week to take on the Fighting Illini, who are also 2-0. I mentioned how I really liked Vontaze Burfict, and I had Arizona State winning a week ago at home. I actually think Illinois pulls the upset here. And I one of the reasons why is the fact that this is Arizona State's first road game of the season. And looking at it from the Illini's perspective, they have a very favorable home schedule all year. They had 8 home games. This is the third of them. They played their first 2 at home already. But I feel like if Ron Zook and this Illinois team are going to seriously be in the conversation as a team that could possibly win the leaders' division, you have this game. You have Ohio State coming into Memorial Stadium. You have Michigan coming in there, and Wisconsin later in the year. This is a game I feel you have to win in order to make that statement, in order to get people to talk about you. And I think they have the quarterback in place, Nathan Shieldhouse. I just think he's going to find a way to propel the Illini to a victory over a team that I think is very good in Arizona State.
I was getting ready to say, if Illinois is thinking about an upset this weekend, the biggest thing that they need to have going is Jason Ford this weekend. Mm-hmm. There would be no upset without Jason Ford this week. I see that he dropped a couple pounds here and there, but Nate Shieldhouse, he's a really, really good quarterback. But I think Arizona State defense at the time is really rolling. And I really feel that Arizona State should be able to take care of business and handily. I just feel that Illinois may not be ready this weekend for Arizona State's defense. Not their offense. Their defense is what gets the job done.
Yeah, and I think, too, the one thing from Arizona State's vantage point, they really got to cut down on some of those penalties, because there were just some really dumb penalties that I thought allowed Missouri to get back in that game in the fourth quarter before Gary Pinkel inexplicably called 2 timeouts to end and ice his own kicker and right before that game went to overtime. But moving along now, team from your home state, Ohio State, travels down to Miami to take on a Hurricane team that lost its season opener, Maryland. They're coming off a bye. Ohio State's coming off a little bit of a scare there from Toledo. They're only able to beat the Rockets by 5, but they are 2-0. This is the Buckeyes' first road game of the season. I like Ohio State, and I think, to me, the X factor is when I look at Miami, that game against Maryland they lost, the Terrapins could have won that game by a lot more than they did. They had a lot of turnovers, particularly in the red zone. I don't see Ohio State doing that. And in addition, Jake Stoneburner's really established himself as a go-to target down there deep in the red zone. And I just think that Joe Bouserman's going to get the ball to him there, and I don't see Miami being able to stop him. I think he has a big game, and I think the Buckeyes get out of Miami with a victory again over the Hurricanes. Not to mention the fact, too, that Miami announced that Ja'Cory Harris is going to start for him. So I could see some turnovers coming that way as well with the defense that Ohio State has in place.
I was getting ready to say, one of the biggest things is that Ohio State had two defensive backs actually suspended this past weekend, and that's what one of the reasons why they struggled. But at the same time, Akron gave everything they had this past weekend.
You mean Toledo.
Oh, Toledo.
They played Akron in the first game of the season, and Ohio State beat them handily. It was Toledo that had, like, a 15-7 lead before that punt return.
Right. Oh, excuse me. But I really feel that this is probably one of the toughest weeks Miami probably had practicing-wise. And I think a bye really didn't help them. Maybe they should have scheduled a cupcake between that game, but we didn't know what Maryland would have been this past offseason or whatnot. But Maryland stuck it to them, and now Miami comes off a bye week with Ja'Cory Harris being named a starter, which I feel that, yes, he's been a starter over the past couple of years, but their quarterback that they had that started against Maryland is a pretty darn good quarterback also. But now Ohio State get their defensive backs back. They get one of their running backs back. Ohio State has a great tight end. Ohio State is Ohio State. Miami is Miami. But this game, glory-wise, is not what it was last year. But I think Ohio State goes in and take care of business. It might be closer than what a lot of people think it is. Miami will play really hard and tough, and they will not forget their game they played last year.
Now the game that I know you're very excited to talk about, as am I, because it's one that has been hyped as a marquee matchup pretty much throughout the entire offseason. People have been talking about it. Oklahoma, the number one team in the country, is going down to Tallahassee Saturday night to take on the fifth-ranked Florida State Seminoles. These two teams met in Oklahoma last year. The Sooners drilled Florida State. Like, it was not even close. Now this game's at Doak Campbell Stadium. They're going to have the atmosphere. They're going to have College Game Day. They basically are having the exposure that they haven't had, quite frankly, since Bobby Bowden was a coach, and they were winning national titles with Chris Winkie and Peter Warrick and all of those players. All that being said, I give Oklahoma a slight edge. I think Florida State's a very good team. I have them winning the ACC this year, but I give Oklahoma a slight edge, even with this game being at Florida State, mainly because the Sooners are just too talented, in my opinion. I look at Landry Jones. I look at Ryan Broyles. And I just see a matchup that I don't know if Florida State's going to be able to stop that defensively. And then, conversely, the Sooners, I know they're without Travis Lewis right now, but they have playmakers on that defensive side of the ball. And one or two mistakes by Florida State could really put this game out of reach if the Sooners are able to capitalize.
You know what? It's not just Ryan Broyles, Landry Jones. They have another good receiver, Kenny Stills. That guy is really good. The biggest question mark for both teams, I would say, right now is Oklahoma's running back and also E.J. Manuel for Florida State. I really feel that E.J. Manuel need to play his heart out, play his best game that he had ever played. Just because Oklahoma is going to come there and bring everything they got, but Florida State won't forget about what happened last year. And I'm going to go with my upset pick this weekend.
Oh, wow.
Florida State over Oklahoma.
And I'll tell you what, if Florida State does win this game, it really sets up for them. Because I don't see anybody, except maybe Virginia Tech, I don't see anybody else in the ACC that's going to beat them. And they wouldn't be playing the Hokies until December in that championship game. But conversely for Oklahoma, I know the Sooners, I know the Big 12 is pretty top-heavy, but I think this is the toughest game on OU's schedule. If they're able to get out of Doak Campbell Stadium with a win, I don't know who in the Big 12 is going to beat them. So, to me, it really looks like whoever wins this game has a realistic shot of playing for the national championship. We'll have to wait and see, but that's going to be a really good one. I know I'm looking forward to seeing that one. And then, if you stay up very late Saturday night, you will be able to watch Andrew Luck and the Stanford Cardinal, who are ranked sixth in the country, visit Arizona and take on a Wildcat team that Iowa fans, I'm sure, are very familiar with. You're obviously familiar with because you played them your senior year. And this is an interesting little quarterback battle here between Andrew Luck for the Cardinal and Nick Foles for Arizona. I know this game's in Tucson. But to me, and maybe Arizona gets Jerron Kreiner back, that'd be huge for him if they do. I just don't think, even if they do, I don't know if that's going to be enough, especially against a Stanford team that right now is just rolling. They just came off a 30-point victory at Duke. Granted, it's Duke, but still, Andrew Luck looked really good. There's no reason to think at this moment that he's not the Heisman frontrunner even 2 weeks in.
I was getting ready to say the biggest thing that Stanford can sit here and take this week is that Arizona comes back with a hangover from this past weekend after they got beat up on by Oklahoma State. I really feel that Arizona has a solid team. They're probably not as good as they were last year, but they have a darn good quarterback. That guy can throw to Brock, and they need their receiver back. If they get their receiver back, they have a better shot. I really feel that Andrew Luck, as everyone else knows, is that he's the best quarterback in the nation. And I figure that Andrew Luck needs his defense to show up this week because Arizona going to give their best shot. I really feel that they're going to give their best shot because they came off a really tough game that they could sit there and argue that if they had their receiver,
might have been closer.
It might have been a closer game. And if their defense had stepped up a little bit, which they will be this weekend, that they had the game. But I really feel that they don't have enough right now to stop Stanford.
And right now, too, Arizona's in the middle of a very tough stretch. You mentioned them going to Oklahoma State last week. They play Stanford Saturday night, and then next week Oregon comes into Tucson. So this is a rough September for Mike Stoops. And now, finally, the Hawkeyes, 1-1. They're hosting a Pitt team that, as you said, is 2-0. Game's on at Kinnick Stadium, 11 a.m. Central kickoff. It's on ESPN2 if you can't make it out. All right, Chris, just whatever's on your mind, go.
I really feel this weekend is very key. This is a very key weekend for us to sit here and establish our run. The run game is the key for both teams this weekend. I really feel that Iowa, Marcus Coker, should be ready. Like I said earlier, he better have his hard hat on and ready to go because he will be ran into the dirt this weekend. And then James come back with a play action to Marvin, to Keenan, to CJ, to Brad Harmon. I really feel that this is a good weekend for us to get our mojo back and get on the ground running. And then next week we'd be able to sit here and look towards Louisiana Monroe, and then we have a bye week after that. So the guys are looking at it. This is a huge game for us because we get Louisiana Monroe and then a bye week and then set ourselves up for the second half of the season to go into the Big Ten on a good note. We really need this game, and I really feel that we will take this game just because Coach Ferentz will be running that rock.
I do think that Iowa is going to come back with a little bit of a vengeance this week, and I do think the Hawkeyes are going to prevail. The score I'm going to give is 27-24. I think it's going to be a bit of a shootout, mainly because I just don't know if there's enough there with the defense right now to be able to stop a guy like Ray Graham for four quarters. I think he's going to get his, but to me, and I do think that they'll run the ball with Coker, like you said, but I think the biggest difference for me between these two teams, besides the fact that this game's at Kinnick Stadium, and I'll just say right now, if this game is in Pittsburgh, I'd be a little bit more towards picking Pitt to win, but I think the difference here is quarterbacks. I'm not sold on Tino Sinceri. I'll just come out and say I've seen the guy play before. I wasn't that impressed by him. He didn't really look that impressive last weekend against Maine. He threw two interceptions, completed, I think, 21 of 35 passes. Didn't have a single touchdown pass in a game against Maine. They only won by six. I look at James Vandenberg. I think he knows the mistakes that he made against Iowa State last weekend. And I think this is the opportunity that he's going to have to bounce back. I think this is the one. This is going to be that first game or the one game that you're going to look back on and think, okay, this is when James Vandenberg's finally established himself as, hey, he's no longer the guy that's replaced Ricky Stanzi. This is his team. This is his offense. I do think they'll get the running game involved, like you said, but I think this is the opportunity that he's going to have to hit guys like Marvin McNutt, Keenan Davis, and the other players you mentioned. I think this is the game where he really kind of takes control and I don't want to call it a coming out party, but I think this is the game that people are going to look at and say, okay, this is when James Vandenberg has established himself as the guy. And you're not just looking at him having a game against Tennessee Tech and going, oh, yeah, he, you know, had a pretty solid game. Or against Iowa State, it's like, yeah, he had a good game, but didn't make enough plays in the end to win it. I think this is the week that he's going to finally make those plays that's going to be the difference in the game, and that's why I have the Hawkeyes winning. And that's going to do it for this week's edition of the Talking Hawks podcast. Remember, you can sign up to become a subscriber to HawkeyeDrive.com. We offer a 3-day free trial. We also have subscriptions $9.99 a month, $89.99 a year, and they provide you access to all the premium content on the site as well as the free stuff that's already there for your disposal. Chris, thank you once again for coming back on, especially considering we weren't able to have any guests to join us this week, and appreciate it, and thanks.
I appreciate the time.
And for Chris Rowell, I'm Brendan Stiles signing off.